Welcome to Forests, Folklore, and Fantasy. My name is Kelly, but I write and publish under my initials as K.M. Rice. Wherever you happen to be, and whatever you happen to be doing as you're listening to this, I want to thank you so much for gifting me some of your time to listen and let you know that you are most welcome here. In this episode, we're going to talk about something that could be interpreted as a fad or as a phenomena, and that is a lifestyle that has been given the appellation slow living. Now, I'm gonna get into some varying aspects of slow living pretty soon here. And of course, look for some defining characteristics, maybe not from my classic, increasingly leaned upon friend, the dictionary, but definitely from some other resources. But I want to preface it by saying that if there's a concept of slow living, then what is fast living? So fast living would be living at the pace as perceptively dictated, or rather your perception of the dictated pace of life by the media and hustle and bustle around you if you happen to live in a city. So fast-paced living is largely driven by capitalism and by consumerism. Here in the United States, we have a consumer economy. So a lot of our businesses are dependent upon people consuming, upon people buying goods. And of course, that extends far beyond the fairly common goods, such as food and clothing. It then branches into things that aren't necessarily a need, but a want. And it's advertisers' job, of course, to convince you that you want that. This is something we touched on a little bit in the episode Good Enough, because one of the nasty side effects of much modern marketing is that it can leave a person feeling as if they have something wrong with them, or as if they don't have enough or are not enough. And of course, that's intentional. How are you going to sell someone who already has their basic needs met a new idea or a new product if you don't first convince them that there is something missing and that they need it? So in order to maintain an economy based on consumerism, these messages need to be produced rapidly. And we're all consuming these ads online, on TV, on the radio, on our podcasts. I don't know. Maybe you had to listen to an ad before you even tuned into this today. But they're all trying to make you feel as if you don't have enough, where the reality is that if your basic needs are met, you do have enough. And if you still want to push back and say you don't, you're on stable ground to cultivate enough. So that's what I would like to explore through this concept of slow living. Like a lot of us, I think that I've actually been practicing this idea of slow living for much longer than I even knew of the term. And you may relate to that, especially as older folks. We will relate to some of the aspects of slow living because there is a definite focus on having the ability to unplug. And of course, for us older folks, there was never a plug. We weren't plugged. There wasn't something to unplug. So, I mean, you could have been plugged in other ways, unfortunately, but not necessarily electronically. We didn't have the internet in our pockets. It just wasn't a thing. So when I hear people talking about slow living, a part of me is always like, you mean like my childhood? But even then, yeah, we had TV. I was being bombarded with commercials. I got my Kmart catalog every Christmas with all the new toys. But it was definitely a different world. And the world is very changed from how it was in the 90s. And I am speaking as an early adapter, if I can call myself that. The internet entered our home definitely in the 90s. And because my dad was always into technology, he had a dial-up connection probably fairly early in the game. I believe it was 1996 when I was first introduced to the idea of email. And one of my family friends, who was also the leader of our local, we had a group called Gay Oot. I don't know. They did some tests with me and said that, oh, you're a gifted kid. So then you get into this club where they just give you some extra access to academic tools, more or less. And it was called Gate. And she was our leader for Gate and teaching us about the internet and email. And I was absolutely obsessed with learning about African wildlife and African cultures and wanting to visit Africa. I was hugely into The Lion King, especially back then. And she somehow had a correspondence with a girl, a child in South Africa, and offered to get me in touch. So my first real exposure to the internet was getting to have a pen pal in another part of the world. And we did exchange a few emails via our parents, but it very quickly became pen and ink pen pals, sending each other photos. And then, of course, when social media eventually came around, we found each other on social media. So that tells you how old I am and what my exposure to the World Wide Web was like. It happened slowly and gradually as I was coming of age and becoming a teenager. It was becoming more and more of a thing. But it definitely separates me from the younger generations who always had access to the internet, always have had access to cameras on phones, and always have had access, more importantly, to each other via the internet. So the concept of slow living isn't necessarily getting rid of that, not getting rid of that connectivity, but using it in the way that is healthiest, and that is using it as a tool. And this does expand beyond our internet usage, but it's really come to light in recent years as a direct reaction to the digital landscape that we find ourselves in. While an argument can certainly be made that this is nothing new, slow living is actually just an extension of several different philosophies and, dare I say, spiritualities. However, if you want to follow its documented origins, I personally was surprised to find that it first really came to the fore in the 80s and in the 90s in the world of foodies as a reaction to fast food. So as fast food was becoming more popular and again being marketed heavier and being more integrated into the fabric of the American lifestyle, people were feeling nostalgic for and also rightly pointing out the dramatic differences, not only in the quality of the food, but in the ritual, I'll call it, of preparation, in the process of lovingly preparing food based on quality ingredients. So this slow food movement came about. And many of you have probably also heard similar terms in the world of fashion. We call a lot of different trends these days fast fashion. So a trend that will hit and be cute and popular and then fade away. And what happens then is people who rushed to buy the hot new clothing item, wore it, had their thrill, and then fashion changed and the garment was no longer popular or in, and so they discard it. And there's a lot of environmental issues around, I don't know what to call it, I'll call it clothing waste. But they're really focused on the fact that it's getting harder and harder to find clothing made from cotton. Polyester and its cousins are cheaper and easier to manufacture. And if you're on a budget like I am, you end up owning quite a bit of polyester because it's what you can afford. But I've noticed that even if I, you know, raise my price range, it's still very difficult to find cotton products. I'm just going to have to come out and say it. I have a dress problem, something I've been aware of for quite a while. I am slowly working on it, but just as when I interviewed Lauren Does Cosplay and she said that the impetus for her making most of her cosplays and her costumes is seeing a beautiful piece of clothing or armor and having the urge to have it on her body, having the thought, I want that on me. That happens to me when I see certain dresses. I'm fully aware that I am falling for the aesthetic, if you will, of the marketing. So that style of marketing that I'm really a sucker for isn't necessarily you're missing this, though I suppose there is a bit of FOMO, fear of missing out, because I want to be the girl in the dress who has that idyllic life. And someone's review for one of these dresses summarized it the best. She said, in this dress, I look like I pick amazing strawberries. And that just summarizes it. If you didn't know, I'm very into Hobbit Core. I am very into Hobbit Core. I meant to say I'm very into Cottage Core. I love Ditzy Floral. I love that aesthetic. And so I fall for these ads, for these beautiful dresses. And like I said, I'm working on it. I do have a dress problem. I buy too many dresses and I try to justify it that I'm going to use them in photos. And therefore, they're kind of for my public persona. But really, I just love dresses and I love wearing them. And I love all these different styles of dresses. However, I've noticed increasingly that you can be expected to pay close to $50 these days for a dress made entirely of polyester. That to me is gross. Polyester was supposed to be the bottom tier of clothing for a lot of reasons. Again, it's very problematic for the environment, but also it doesn't breathe. If you're wearing polyester, which I found out the hard way when my partner and I went on a lovely trip around Europe. I bought all these cute dresses because, again, I love dresses and wanted to take fun pictures in Europe in all these different cute dresses. And because of my budget, I could only really afford polyester and ended up in the south of France, which is incredibly humid, swaddled in polyester, feeling like a sausage encased in plastic, just sweating. And that was how I learned one of the several drawbacks of polyester. But I am very much digressing from my point that fast fashion has some very valid environmental criticisms and concerns. It's just quite wasteful and unnecessary. And what's really funny, again, as an older person, I'm watching trends come back into style from my teenage years. So late 90s, early 2000s fashion trends are finding their way back into the market. And I still have some of those close. And I don't fit into a lot of them, but there's a handful that I can still fit into. And now they're back in style. So I suppose that is slow fashion and slow living and the concept behind how you dress if you're going for a slow living lifestyle would probably be just that. Wear what you want to wear based on your own aesthetics. And, you know, forgive me for my little fashion dress tangent that took up more of this episode than should have, but that's the heart of slow living. The heart of slow living is identifying your values and your goals in life, in a month, in a week, in a day, and structuring as much as possible your lifestyle around those things. In a way, it's revolutionary. Because the messaging we receive is that your lifestyle should be completely structured around your job. And that's what I mean when I say slow living is, in a lot of ways, a reaction to capitalism. Because capitalism teaches us that our inherent value and worth is in our finances and is in our productivity and the wealth we can help accumulate for others, if not for us. Slow living is subversive because if you are living from your heart, if you are giving yourself permission to prioritize what is vital to you as an individual, you are inherently decentralizing or decentering whatever it is you happen to do to earn an income. So your job is intentionally severed from your identity. That's not necessarily a key tenet of slow living, but I find it a very important one. Hopefully, ideally, what a person does to earn income is also something that brings them fulfillment and joy. So I don't mean checking your work hours at the door or checking your job at the door and then structuring the rest of your non-working time in this idyllic fashion, but rather recognizing that that is your role, your job, your title. Whatever you do for income is just a facet of who you are. And it is not your identity. And often it's an identity assigned to us by others. And I think that's a really key component. Because slow living, again, is about identifying your desires, your values, and your priorities. Thus, giving yourself the freedom to embrace a more honest and truthful version of yourself that you can then pursue. You can then pursue allowing your inner landscape to be reflected in the lifestyle choices you make. A good example of prioritizing these values would be something near and dear to my heart, about which I am going to record an episode very soon. And that would be gardening. Whether you're attempting to grow some vegetables or fruit or flowers, or if you have houseplants, say that is a priority for you. If you give yourself permission for that to be a priority, or maybe the priority, you can structure your time, your free time, around ensuring that you give yourself the freedom to do that activity. And what happens is over time, as you give yourself more and more permission to engage in, I'll call them hobbies, which is silly because it's sort of, you know, it's very capitalistic, because if you're not earning income from it and it isn't your job, it's a hobby. It's actually just life. You know, it's actually just living life. And it, maybe you do even earn income from it, but that's, you don't have to earn income from anything that gives you pleasure to make it justifiable. And yet that's the messaging we receive from our society. But if you identify what's important to you, and if you identify ways that you would prefer to spend your time, and you start making some small changes to allow more time for those activities, you find that you feel more peace and a stronger sense of rootedness in your own identity and in your own life. I mean, this is your life, dear listener. This is your life. It's no one else's. You get to decide what to do with it. I know we all have pressures and responsibilities and requirements and expectations, but at the end of the day, this is your life, just yours. Why not take the time that you have and use it in a way that brings you fulfillment? Another tenet of slow living is the aspect of mindfulness. If you're making a conscious effort to stay focused, to stay in the moment, to relish the moment, then you are practicing mindfulness. There is such a false sense of urgency in our culture on the whole, but in particular with the prevalence of mobile phones. That false sense of urgency contributes to stress, which of course contributes to poor health and can damage relationships. Small changes can actually combat this. Personally, I noticed it just before I went to record this episode. I had just sent a quasi-important email and was sitting down to get something to eat. And in that ounce of time that it was going to take me to take my food and sit down and start eating, I thought, oh, I wonder if she wrote back yet. And I was going to click on my email to see. I don't think it was humanly possible for the recipient to have read it and responded, certainly not thoughtfully. And I recognized that and recognized that I was on autopilot and that I was allowing myself to be completely distracted from what I was doing, which was actually waiting for my food to cook. And that made me think about how often I surrender my time to impulse. Like most people who are accustomed to having a mobile phone, when I have a moment or two to kill, I use that to check in on my social media or to check my email or to read messages. There isn't anything inherently wrong with that, but as you may or may not know, social media feeds were modeled after slot machines. They're intended to more or less hack your brain, your dopamine receptors, and give you little hits of pleasure, of intrigue, trigger your curiosity, increasingly trigger your outrage, and get you engaged, get you out of your actual environment and into the virtual environment, often so that they can get you to take an action. And that action is usually to hand over some of your money. But if you're self-aware enough to recognize these impulses, you can acknowledge them and then choose whether or not you're going to act on them. So before I sat down to record, I did have that urge and I spoke to myself in my head and I said, no, what are you doing right now? You're making lunch. You're making lunch. That's what you're doing right now. You're not checking email. You can check email later. Right now, you're doing this. And I have increasingly drawn those boundaries for myself, within myself. And it does help bring me a greater sense of peace. So that is an example of how I apparently have been practicing one of the tenets of slow living without necessarily giving it that label. But, and that's why I say slow living isn't about excluding digital technologies or communication technologies. It's rather about using them in their place and time, using them as a tool and using them more mindfully, or on the flip side, being more mindful of our use, dependence on them. People don't really have free time anymore because we use that 5 minutes while we're waiting for the bus or whatever to meet up with a friend to just look at our phones. We're not actually there outside the restaurant interacting or observing the pigeons or watching the taxi pick up that woman who's really well dressed and wondering what she's going to. We're numbing ourselves out and distracting ourselves from the present, when the present is all we have. And that's why in many ways, mobile phone or cell phone use is considered an addiction, because it functions like a drug in a lot of ways in our society. Another aspect of slow living that I really adore is honoring creativity. I used gardening as an example earlier, but it could just as easily be singing or playing an instrument or drawing, doodling, sketching. It could be crafting things. I'm a big crafter. It could be baking. Things that bring you joy and make you feel fulfilled really should be at the center of everyone's lifestyle. Family and relationships, of course, are usually the nucleus. Even just giving yourself permission to be in the room with other people and put your phone down and tell yourself, no, right now I'm having a conversation with them, or right now we're just spending time with each other, even if we're not talking. That's what it is to be human. And I realize I am focusing a lot on mobile phone use, but the reason for that is because I do see this becoming a more talked about philosophy in direct reaction to the proliferation of the internet and connectivity and social media into every little nitty-gritty detail of our daily lives. That isn't inherently bad. I am very dependent on social media to in my mind, to remain relevant. I sometimes feel like creating content is a chore. Often I find it a fun means of creative expression. And so I view social media as a tool. And it's my way to engage with folks like you. It's my way to make those bids for connection and to also hopefully put a tiny bit of coin in my pocket, because the more that I'm out there being like, this is me, this is what I'm about, the more likely it seems that someone might take notice and say, oh, she also has some novels that she's written. I wonder what those are like. And then there might be someone who at another stage actually purchases a novel, or perhaps signs up for one of my courses, or maybe really wants to hire me to help them edit their fiction, because I also do story editing. It sounds very self-serving, which I suppose it is, and there is a definite self-serving aspect to why I maintain social media accounts and to why I'm producing this podcast. But another element truly is just connecting with people and self-expression and seeing what other people are up to and what other people are creating. So that's why I feel like it's helpful to look at social media and the internet and our mobile phones as tools rather than entertainment. I think that once we firmly get down the entertainment path, we start to find ourselves in a very sticky quagmire. So if I want to stay hip, apparently this is called slow media. And apparently it's consuming and exposing yourself in such a mindful fashion is apparently called slow media. But I think at this point you have a picture of the concept of slow living. It's setting some intentions for yourself, be that daily or weekly, or even I'm so scattered that for me it's more of those moment by moment times when I'm checking in with myself and reining myself in. I'm trying to get better at forming habits and asking myself questions and setting intentions on a more regular basis, or following some sort of pattern. But it's very difficult for me to follow patterns in general, at least superimposed patterns. And I am slowly finding my way by performing inner conversations like the one I just shared about, no, what are we doing right now? Recognizing and resisting that urge to just randomly open Instagram. That's the one I'm the most active on. And then therefore it's my, you know, that's my poison, is I'm always opening Instagram and just asking myself, why, what are you doing? What are you here for? What are you here to accomplish? It's a good barometer, having that urge to, I'm just going to click on this, to then be like, what are you avoiding right now? What are you escaping from? So I do encourage you to try to start by asking yourself some of those questions. And then, yes, if giving it a name like slow living, ascribing to it as a philosophy, if these types of labels help give you permission to pursue this lifestyle, if saying that you are learning how to live more slowly and mindfully gives yourself the permission you need to start gardening or to do that piece of artwork or to sing that song, then by all means, do it. You won't regret it. We tend to regret the things that we don't do more than the things that we do do. And to loop this back into the conversations I've had with several people thus far in terms of their definition of fantasy, we return to that common element, that common idea, that by removing ourselves from our identities just one little step, for example, by saying, I am practicing slow living now. I am adopting slow living. It's often what we need to give ourselves permission to more fully experience our own identities. How strange, and yet how beautiful. So take this as your sign, my dear listener. Take this as your moment. I am giving you permission to live from your heart. I'm giving you permission to nourish your soul soil. I am giving you any permission or excuse that you need to encourage you to truly find your values and to live by them. Because again, it is your life. It is no one else's. And none of us know how much time we have here. Find fulfillment and joy and give yourself permission to explore. And remember that exploring includes making mistakes. There is nothing wasted. If you find out something isn't for you, or this thing that you always thought you wanted to do and then you tried it and it wasn't so great, who cares? Try something else. Just keep going. And maybe your aspect to slow living, maybe your aspect to finding that fulfillment isn't necessarily taking up a craft that you can do sedentarily. Maybe it's going out there into the world. Maybe it's traveling, but doing so with an open heart and mind, and more importantly, doing so with awareness and mindfulness so that you are relishing the experience. When I opened this episode, I was saying that an argument could be made that the concept of slow living is just an extension of so many different philosophies and religions and spiritualities. I am of that argument. I ascribe to that argument. I don't know if this is an actual thing up for discussion. I doubt it. This is more just me talking to myself, but I see a very clear pattern. And one of the more modern, recent examples of this type of approach to life would definitely be the Romantic movement in both literature and in art. Because the Romantics and also the American Transcendentalists believed in relishing the moment. Relishing what is. Yes, daydreaming of what could be. But taking in life with all of its pleasures and sorrows. Accepting and enjoying the entire breadth of the human experience. That, to me, moves in tandem with the concept of slow living. And just as much as the Romantic movement, a period that elevated emotions and feelings and the irrationality of them in direct contrast to the previous generation and era, the Enlightenment, which of course brought forth the scientific revolution and greatly prioritized logic and rhetoric. So too is slow living a direct reaction to the assault on our senses that is the modern world, especially in the digital landscape. Thank you so very much for joining me for this exploration. Please feel free to leave comments. If you're listening on Spotify, you can do so below. If not, feel free to join me on my social media and or on YouTube or on my Patreon, where you can join for free. And leave a comment, because I would love to know. Last week, I asked for your favorite cozy games or recommendations. I would likewise love to know, what changes have you made, or what aspects of your lifestyle or your life have you encouraged to facilitate a sense of a fulfilled way of being or slow living? Thank you so much again for joining me. Please do find me on the interwebs that I just bashed for the better part of 40 minutes. But again, it's a tool, and there are a lot of upsides if used responsibly. But please do find me. The links are all in the show notes. And if you are enjoying this podcast, please do give it a follow, give it a rating if it so tickles your fancy, and more importantly, share it with a friend, especially episodes like this that could help spur a dialogue. They could help spark a discussion. You can use me as your point of contention and be like, oh, she was so wrong about all this, or I thought she was right about all this. And you guys can like really get into it. Use me again if I'm being used as your excuse or permission to pursue something that you feel like you need that little nudge to pursue. You can likewise use this podcast as the conversation starter and use me as the fodder. I really appreciate all of your support so far, and just know that you warm my heart by listening and following and leaving comments on all of that good stuff, so that I know I'm not alone and that there actually is a community out there, and that I'm not just talking into the void, as I've put it before. There are two episodes left in this first season of Forests, Folklore, and Fantasy before I take a break and come back with another season. So thank you for the millionth time so much for listening. And until next time, may your hearth be warm and your heart be full.